welcome to Lament Configuration, a podcast about shit that makes us extremely sad. I'm Gretchen Felker-Martin, a horror novelist and movie critic, and with me is my co-host.
I'm Julia Graffer. I'm a graphic novelist and the inventor of zines.
That's very true. Zines were invented in, what, like 1997 by you, right?
That's right. And since then, I alone have been able to dictate what is a zine and who gets to use that word for what purpose. It's an awesome responsibility, but I'm up to it.
It must feel like carrying the football around, you know, the briefcase with nuclear codes.
Oh,
it's a
symbolic football.
Yeah.
It does. At any time, I could ruin zines for everybody forever.
Wow. That's quite something.
I know. Let me ask you a stupid question. Is my voice a lot quieter than yours on the recording?
It looks like it on the little graph.
I'm going to fuck around with the settings a little bit. We can keep talking. We can keep creating content while I do that. This is the first episode of what we hope will continue to be a podcast. So people will understand we're working the kinks out in real time. This is very humanizing.
Yeah. Even now, you're coming to think of us as beloved co-workers. So today we're going to talk about content as a word, as a cultural concept.
As a viral tweet that Gretchen made this week.
So
pissed everybody off.
I tweeted, as I'm sure anyone who will bother listening to this knows,
Everybody knows what you did.
I tweeted, stop fucking calling art content. Because to me, the word content sort of flattens anything you can look at in the world and that might hold your attention into one homogenous, like, gray paste. The ads before a movie are content. Not the previews, but, you know, shit for like local businesses and the Army National Guard. That's content. The copy on your dentist's website is content.
I don't even know if that is, because the copy on your dentist's website is doing a job. Like, it has a job other than to fill an empty space, theoretically. I mean, usually
that's true.
I guess a dentist's website is usually kind of boilerplate. Like, it's just, you know, happy to serve you. Everybody is whatever. It's like not.
We all know the amount of teeth an adult human has.
45.
Yeah.
But I think of content as like, you know, like if you're laying out a magazine or something and you put the like lorem ipsum where the articles will go, that's like.
Right. That's content.
We just need like some kind of a chunk of entertainment to go in this spot.
Right.
Content to me.
Yeah. I think that's a good working definition of content. It's something that exists not because someone wanted it to, but because a suit said that it has to.
Yes.
You know, and that connects well to discussing it in the context of like streaming services like Netflix and Hulu. Places that create shows to meet a quota of new things. And
yeah, like Netflix shows are definitely content because there's like, they only exist for the purpose of maintaining the existence of Netflix. Does that make sense?
I think it does. I mean, Netflix traditionally cancels its own shows after a short period. Because their draw stops pulling new people into the platform. So it's in this endless kind of churn where it always has to be making something new, but it's all very formulaic as well. I mean, all of their shows are more or less the same. They look the same. They follow the same plot structures. Even the episodes are kind of often very undifferentiated.
Yes.
Just like a big smear, like a 2-hour movie stretched out to 12 hours.
I don't know that I've watched a Netflix original show. I watched that Christmas movie where the knight travels through time. I think that's a Netflix original movie. I think
most of that with you and Frank.
Oh, we love it so much. the night before Christmas or something.
Just beautiful.
We watched it a lot of times. That's kind of the problem, right? Like, it was delightful. It's
content is supposed to get you somewhere and keep you there.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like I had seen it before, even the first time that I had watched it. In the best way, in like a way where I felt held and valued, and you know, like it was very comforting. It was a wonderful feeling, not like a bored feeling.
I mean, they made that movie in the late 90s with Jean Reno. It's like basically word for word.
Oh shit.
I think it's called Just Visiting.
Just Visiting.
And he,
I think I just need to hold the microphone closer to my fucking face.
Oh yeah, there's the graph looks better now.
It looks real good.
Yeah, that's a sexy graph, Juge.
I gotta make it real, make the curves whiplash. Make an Art Nouveau graph. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was just talking about Jean Reno in Just Visiting, which is a movie about a medieval lord who gets sucked into the future where he like learns how to be a better man from his descendant or something. And it's like the same kind of romance plot, fish out of water thing.
I mean, I guess there's a lot of mileage in that plot. You could probably do that multiple times. That's like a Yankee and King Arthur's court. Exactly. No, it's not. It's different. Well,
it's the reverse Connecticut Yankee. which is also a very dangerous sex position.
That's correct. It's illegal in 10 states.
Well, that's the beauty of America, is state by state. You know, we can make these laws for ourselves.
It means you have to be careful and check before you cross state lines, because if you're in a car while you're doing the sex position, then
you could become a criminal.
Yeah, just by going 45 miles an hour instead of 40.
Damn. So
I'm sorry, this is a stupid bit. What were we saying?
So we were talking about content and how sometimes it can be enjoyable and comforting. And, you know, I think this is something I've thought about a lot. When you take sort of an archetypal example of big pop culture content, like the Marvel movies, where you have two or four of them every year, and they're all the same movie.
Yeah.
And they all star sort of blandly attractive people who are known but not too well known before coming into Marvel. And
so that they can really become the face of that character.
Right.
They don't have an identity outside of that.
Right, like no one is
for the audience.
No one is bringing Pierce Brosnan into Marvel because he's already James Bond.
That's right.
And I think that one goal behind that is to provide kind of a blank canvas for viewers so that they can sort of project whatever they have going on onto it, which of course creates a strong emotional attachment.
Right, because you're...
Yeah, you wind up with this scenario where you have a ton of people who are very invested in something, as long as that something doesn't say or do anything.
I feel like it's hard for me to relate to the Marvel, like so much of the discourse. I think that part of the theme of this podcast is probably going to be that you and I spend a lot of time on Twitter and a lot of time DMing each other being like, what the fuck is this? I haven't really seen any Marvel movies or DC movies, any superhero movies. So it's kind of lost on me all this discourse when people talk about them. Like I'm sure that they blow. I have no interest in them. I like, as a woman in comics, I am accustomed to the experience of having people talk about superheroes around me. I think all of my knowledge of superheroes is, you know, because like somebody was talking at me about them or near me. It's not content that has like value for me. It's not something that I'd voluntarily consume. And it, you know, maybe if I, it became a thing after, like when I was in my 20s. So it was, if I had been younger, maybe I would have formed more of an attachment to it, or it would mean something to me. Like suddenly it became a whole genre of movie. Like,
right.
That it didn't, there didn't used to be a superhero movie in the theater all the time. It was like, that was a very specific thing. And now it's, there's, you got your horror movie and your drama and your thriller and your capes. Like, that's very weird to me.
It's become the dominant genre.
Yeah. And I have never cared for those kind of comics, and I don't have any interest in those kind of movies. I think I saw the first Iron Man movie. I remember it being pretty fun, but like,
sure, you know, they're in the same way that it's fun to like jam a bunch of goldfish into your mouth and then chew them into a paste.
Oh, it's really fun. You mean the crackers?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Not the animal. I don't endorse that.
Aren't you glad people can't take screenshots of a podcast?
Good God.
Yeah. So I don't understand what it is that people are relating to in the movies. I know that's like a really boring take, but I would like to understand. Not so much that I am going to watch the movies, I think. But you know, like, you know me, I like to like things. I like to learn to like new things that previously did not appeal to me. But I also don't have the necessary impetus to develop an interest in this thing. But it does, again, to me, they are not, like, there's, I can't tell the difference between them when there's like, you know, their age of the battle of the fucking,
right,
some it's shit. All, they all look the same to me.
Nothing.
Okay, Grandma, let's get you to bed.
it seems like
they are just kind of like being cranked out in order to like fill a position. Like, nobody is like being inspired to make a new
superhero
thing. Are they? Do people like express the is that like the song of somebody's soul?
I mean, it must be. I know that they're very passionate cartoonists and all of that. But I also know that in the case of the films, which are show run, so they're all administrated from a central, nominally creative agency, overseen by Kevin Feige, who is the some sort of creative director at Marvel, to make sure that they all have the same tone, all share sort of a look.
That's fascinating.
It is. It's very fascinating. And you know, the look that he and the executives at Marvel and Disney have settled on is very blandly popular. You know, it's not too colorful.
It seems inoffensive.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's not something that you'll look at and recoil from. I mean, yeah. unless you're cool like me.
Right. That's right. Is this what it comes down to? Is it just stuff that we think is uncool? I mean, it is uncool. It's superheroes are very uncool.
I do think that Star Wars is uncool, even though that I enjoy some of it. What was I saying?
I don't. I'm pure.
I know, honey. All right.
Thank you.
So I do think that part of it is that the Marvel movies and other like corporate mandated art is very uncool. But I also think that the ethos and the edifice behind these things are disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they are military propaganda in the case of the superhero films.
Marvel has active agreements with the DOD and the Air Force and other American arms of the armed forces. I think that kind of dynamic existing in popular art, I should not have to explain why that is bad.
And also the part of our objection to the word content is that, you know, these kinds of media products, part of their reason for being is to strip away the idea of these characters, these stories, as work by an auteur, work by a creator, work right. by work of individual human genius and inspiration.
I mean, you don't have to look any further than Marvel itself, many of whose seminal early artists died in poverty.
That is very true. It is not, it's, I'm always saying this, that we as artists are like, when you're doing like tax forms and stuff, you have to like choose your like the category of the work that you do. Mm-hmm. And if you do arts and entertainment work, it is like in the same category with like being a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. Which when I was younger I used to think was funny, but now that I'm older I think it makes a lot of sense. Like what we do is not that different from being a professional athlete, in the sense that we're kind of the dog's body that generates the money for somebody else.
Right. You know, in the same way that a football player generates money for the NFL.
Exactly. And then like they give it everything they've got for as long as they have, and then their body is busted and they can't do anything else with themselves and they get tossed aside for somebody new. That's us. Yeah. That's I don't even like saying creator either, because it has that same kind of corporate speak to it. But being an artist, being a creator, you are very disposable to people who, the more opportunities that you have to make money, the more, like, you get those because somebody thinks they can make money from you. Mm-hmm. And then you get a cut of it.
Right. You are the commodity in that scenario.
Right.
The fact
so that the part of
Oh sorry, go ahead.
Part of it of media that is content is that it feels like it didn't come from anybody, you know, all the edges are sanded off.
Right. You're creating a black box for art.
Yeah, and it's disempowering to the people who watch it, because mm-hmm. The purpose of art is to be a tool of communication between people, to enter into another person's mind, to have some kind of experience of communion, of recognizing a shared humanity with another person. Like, those are the moments of art that are meaningful to me. Is, you know, when I see something in a book or a movie or a fucking installation or whatever, that's like, you know, you touch something divine, you touch something profound. And that happens because you are in a place with an individual. Or it doesn't necessarily have to be just one person. But, you know, there's a singular vision there. It hasn't been focus grouped.
Right.
When people only experience art as something that comes from a company, then it really harms that. Like, it's not just that the art is bad in and of itself. Like, I think that it is spiritually degrading to people who consume it, because you are having that same moment of communion with a simulacrum of a human being. You know
right,
what I
it
mean?
Is this slick, unemotional, again, corporate mandated product. It's not you know, maybe some of the people who worked on it loved it. And maybe they really felt a lot about it. But at the end of the day, it's no one's vision and it was no one's dream. Someone said in a board meeting, we need a movie about the Blue Beetle or whatever. And so
is that a guy or is that a real superhero?
I think so. And so that's going to be the guy who is our Q3 in 2023.
Yes.
You know, and that's why that movie exists. It's not because someone loved an idea and worked their ass off. And it's not that any other system of making a movie is perfect.
Right. Making a movie is so expensive that you are always going to have to be a little bit of a whore in order to get it done.
Right. What I was going to say a minute ago, you mentioned that creator is sort of corporate speak, and that's very true. And I was actually looking into the origins of popular use of content.
Ooh.
And it seems like it's been in regular circulation since like the 60s.
Really?
Yeah, but pretty much exclusively corporate until the late 90s when Bill Gates wrote a short essay called Content is King.
Oh.
First of all, the fucking balls on someone to pattern their article after Cotton is King.
Yeah.
Which was like a pro-slavery stump speech by a weird Confederate politician who later fell out of favor for molesting his own nieces.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
Extremely cool and chill. Guy.
Anyway, so great launching point, Bill Gates. But he talks about, you know, he speaks very frankly about how the internet will become profitable and how content will determine where that profit comes from. And it's exactly as sort of bland and soulless and crushing as you would expect that essay to be. Bill Gates is not an interesting man to listen to, but he is intelligent and he does know how markets move. And, you know, he talks extensively about the need to create and package things. And it doesn't matter what they are. Because the point of them is not...
He says that?
Yeah.
Hot damn.
Yeah, he's just like, well, everyone needs to have a lot of very attractive things. Yeah. So that people will come and, like, sign up or... advertisers will want to buy in. And he's talking about this before the technical hurdles of like internet advertising and subscription services had been overcome by a exponentially increasing user base and improved technology. But he correctly predicts that the key for the success of online commerce is just to make a lot of things.
Right. It's not, it's all about volume.
Right.
As in quantity, not as in loudness.
Right. Although I guess it amounts to the same thing in this instance.
Uh-huh.
It's just a wall of experience coming at you 24/7.
The content will be determined by volume and not weight.
Right. Netflix, I think, is premiering a new movie every week this year.
Jesus.
Which is insane. No one wants that. And it's not profitable for them.
But it's not?
No. Here's an interesting thing. Companies like Netflix and Lyft are not profitable at all. They're disastrous money holes. And the reason that they have so much valuation and thus so much capital to move around is because they have first funded through venture capital acquisition and then deployed a model that destroys competition and leaves them the only game in town.
So they're all, it's speculation?
Yes.
That people are investing on them, investing in them, waiting for them to ruin the market?
Basically.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, when people talk about vampire capitalism, I don't think they really appreciate the extent to which we already live inside the vampire's mouth.
Rich people are so fucking perverse.
And the, you know, maybe the most offensive thing about rich people is that they're boring and have no taste.
It's true. They have terrible taste.
I mean, look at their homes. They all live in these fucking astronaut capsules.
Right. Or else they have, like, that really weird, like, rich people version of, like, they have an idea of, like, what Versailles looks like when they saw it in a movie.
Right.
And then they, like, have to have a gold bathtub or some shit.
Right, right, right. Like,
just completely tasteless.
Yeah.
Not like me. If I was a rich person, I'd be a cool rich person.
Yes.
I'm not. I'll never be a rich person. If I ever... What is the cap for me personally?
If you...
I'm going to say, like, I've never made more than 50 grand in a year. No, nowhere near. Actually, I just don't want people who listen to this to know very much about my finances. But I'm going to say, when I used to read Metafilter regularly, and this is a conversation that would come up pretty often, who counts as rich? And the figure that would come up a lot, as I recall, was 250,000. And then, of course, a lot of Metafilter people would be like, oh, well, I make $250,000, and it's not really that much when it comes down to it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I'll fucking trade you, and then we'll see.
we'll just try it. I just want to talk about it. I just want to do a little experiment. And it, like, when you see... I don't know how real the financial breakdowns that you see on the internet are, but it's always like some kind of stupid shit, like private school tuition that they're paying out of pocket, or like they're paying like $600 a month for their car, or, you know, they're like, oh, well, we have to have the 8-week vacation to some place that is expensive, right, for rich people to visit. I don't fucking know.
Therapist, that's not right. Negotiable.
They have, but it's some kind of recurring expense that they just like have forgotten that you can do without. Like, I have a lot more money since there's been the pandemic, which is weird. But you know, it's just because I'm like doing way less things that cost money. I basically only spend money on groceries now, and you know, like rent. But one of the things that I have not been doing is going to ballet class, which I used to do twice a week, and it cost $20 every class. And I was like, this is important to me. It's probably good for my health or some shit. Like, I can afford to pay $40 a week to do this thing. But then not doing it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm rich. Like, this is right. So much extra money every month. Like, I... Even when it is going to be acceptable to go back, I don't know if I'm going to go back to it because it's a lot of money. But you have these like recurring invisible expenses. So it seems like that's what a lot of the $250,000 is going to, that makes it not as much as you might think.
Yeah, it really does seem like foolishness and excess. I think that a lot of...
Oh, it's absolutely excess.
I think that a lot of the economic irresponsibility that frequently gets pinned on younger people and the poor is actually the provenance of like the upper middle class.
Absolutely. Well, because people, when they are visualizing, when people who are not poor are moralizing about what the poor should or should not do, they're making bad food choices. I love that one. They're visualizing an upper middle class person, probably somebody that they know, maybe even themselves, that went through a period of poverty. You know, like maybe they were in college, or maybe like they have a cousin who's a drug addict or something, you know, and they're like, oh, well, all I had to do when I was in college was just like eat rice 25 times a week and it, or whatever. Or they're like, well, all you have to do to not be poor is just not start smoking meth. Like, it seems simple,
right?
Because it, to them, it's a will. It's an aberrant condition, and not just like a default state of being,
right? Whereas for people like us, poor is the state of everyone around us and everyone we know.
Right.
More or less. I mean, I've also never made approaching $50,000. When people ask me, how do I become a writer? What I immediately tell them is, when I finally broke into mainstream success, I received a book deal spread out over 4 years for less than what my friend who is a librarian makes in one.
Yes. And I don't know what a librarian makes. Like, I'm not even going to try to do the math based on what you just said, but I'm sure that it's not enough. Whatever a librarian makes is not what they are owed.
I'm sure. It's an actually important job, so I'm sure it's undervalued.
Listen, if there weren't people like us making the content for the libraries, the librarian would have nothing to do, Gretchen.
That's very true. So really, they kind of work for us.
Yeah, they should be paying us. Everybody should be paying us. That's what I actually believe, is that artists should be indiscriminately federally funded.
Yes, but also it's praxis to give us money.
Yes, it is. Us personally.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that sort of suit first attitude behind the idea of content, this sanding away of the fact that there are teams of people who work on these movies and all the ephemera around them. I think that that whole way of making art is sick. And it promotes a cultural sickness. And it creates a world where art is something that is handed to you from on high by an untouchable corporate entity.
Yes, yes.
And what exactly. I firmly believe, and what I know you also believe, is that art is small and dirt cheap. And that it is passed from hand to hand and soul to soul.
Okay, but here's the thing. This is me. I'm a Twitter guy now. I have a little Pit Crew avatar. And I have my pronouns and my display name next to a little rainbow flag. I'm going to be like, listen, Gretchen, you fucking bitch. Not everybody can afford to make art that is not commodifiable. And that's an incredible privilege that you have to not be selling your work. I mean, that's the counter argument, right? Like, it's a get out of self-examination free card that some people have found, I think, to be like, oh, well, I have to do this shitty thing because I'm in this shitty circumstance. Like, sometimes that's true. I think sometimes it's true. But it's not an argument for that system. That's the thing that I don't get, is that they're like, oh, well, I think the system is good, actually, because I need to participate in it to survive. Like, the fact that you have to participate in it to survive is the proof that it sucks.
It's Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm Syndrome's not real.
Okay, I know. Helsinki Syndrome. Point being, it is coming to identify with and rely on a system that has its boot on your neck.
Well, yes. Yes, true. I'm going to just continue to say controversial shit. This is what people come for. Not controversial, obnoxious. Well, both. And also true. I think that the knee-jerk reaction of, like, I have to do this because this is what pays the bills, like, part of what's behind that is a fear of not being able to self-generate work to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
A lot of people seem to not trust themselves to have ideas. The ideas that they have, am I inventing a guy and then getting mad at that guy This is like when I talk to young artists on Discord or on Twitter or in person, when that used to happen, there's a lot of like concern about how do I get ideas? How do I know that an idea is good enough to pursue? And how will I know like what I can do with this? Who would buy it? When you make art for the purpose of selling it, then you are you're creating something that has a purpose already. Like, you know what's going to happen to it. And that's very comfortable. Like, and probably financially appealing. I don't know. I wouldn't know. Not a lot of people want to pay me for the things that I do. Yeah, no, that's not true. I mean, it's not sellable in that way is what I mean.
Yeah, I've never sat down to make a piece of art with the express intent of selling it to someone. The only time that I've had a commercial artistic relationship with anyone is my book deal, which was offered to me. I did not seek it out. And
I mean, I've done like illustration for hire, which I'm terrible at, by the way.
Yeah, I know you hate it.
No, but like my style of drawing is very literal. Like, I can't draw a guy without it being a specific guy. And a lot of illustration is like, you know, there's a guy and he's, you know, at the park thinking about a bird or whatever. Like, I'm like, what kind of bird? You know, it's stupid. I had a teacher in, I think, my freshman year of art school who told me that I was not good at abstraction and that I was not going to be able to be a good illustrator because of that. And I kind of think that he was right. Although that has stuck with me. But I also, I was an illustration major at that time and I switched to fine art where I was much happier. And now I'm in this like stupid no man's land of art comics, which are neither fish nor fowl.
You do make beautiful illustrations though, like when you illustrated the that French heraldry book.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I just redrew the illustrations that were already in it. It didn't take a lot of creativity to do that.
Fair enough.
I mean, I can draw things that are beautiful, but it is hard for me to draw something that expresses somebody else's vision. And I've done a lot of like commissions too, like through Etsy. I used to have a thing where people could hire me to do an illustration for whatever, for a tattoo or just like a portrait of somebody to give as a gift or whatever. And I haven't been doing those because I've been mentally not present in a way that allows me to be responsible enough to take commissions from people. I'm just worried that I would not get them done. Anyway, this is a really exciting story about my life. If I were better at doing more commercial work, maybe I would feel differently about it, about this conversation. If somebody would pay me to make content, which I don't think they will.
I think that is a good question to ask ourselves, and I'm not sure how much truth there is or isn't in it. Playing what if is always kind of fraught.
I mean, the thing is, I like us a lot. Like, you and I are my favorite. And on the other side of the conversation to me is like people on Twitter who I don't know them, and second of all, they're very rude. So I really have no incentive to come around to their point of view.
Well,
this isn't a discussion, like a reasoned back and forth about the value of content. This is just a polemic of like why content is bad. That's what you get. This is unilateral.
Well, I mean, there's no
content is lamentable.
It is. It fucking sucks. And there's no real possibility of discourse with these people because you say something they don't like and they fly off the handle like you've attacked their family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's treated very personally. It always blows my mind when I say, you should do something. Just say it into the void. You know, like, oh, everyone should look up at the moon.
Everyone should try putting a slice of cheddar cheese on their apple pie.
Right. And everyone is just like, fuck you. You're not my mom. Don't you understand that some people are lactose intolerant?
And this is what you get for telling people what to do. I saw somebody say that to you today. It's like, of course, this is what you would get, this kind of backlash for telling other people what to do on the internet. Which, like, first of all, it's not like you added that person personally.
Right.
And second, like, is he not telling you what to do on the internet? Could there be hypocrisy?
Right.
I know, it's shocking. And I mean, can I honestly say that I have never responded that way to somebody else's tweet saying to do some kind of a thing that I disagreed with? I'm sure I do it all the time. I don't usually go yell at the person about it.
I think typically you and I will, you know, DM each other or another friend, and
I might do like a tasteful screen cap of it.
Right. Or, you know, a little subtweet.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
you know, show my followers, like, hey guys, how about this? This is sure a thing. And right, then everybody says, yes, Julie, yes, it's totally a thing. Everybody gets it. That's all I want.
Like when the platypus washes up on the shore and you're like, look at this weird fucking thing. This really changes the game, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there really is any merit to the idea that it's somehow good for artists to call art content. Content.
Yeah, I guess that's the other problem with it, is that I didn't see any actual substantive defense of the use of that word. I saw somebody post a screen cap of the dictionary. That was cool.
Three people did that to me that I bothered to look at. I'm sure there were more.
That is incredible. Have you seen the dictionary?
It is, I know,
words.
I almost made a tweet about something being the dictionary's something about the dictionary being a coward's last resort. I mean, it really is turning to the man and saying, "Daddy, what's right?"
I mean, the dictionary can tell you how to use a word, but it doesn't tell you everything about the character and history of the word.
Right.
In fact, oftentimes the dictionary can be very misleading, because it, you know, like how you can tell when somebody is, their writing is like thesaurus-y.
Yes.
Because they have used a word that is similar to the word that you know that they meant, in a way that the word that they used is not normally used.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at a word in the dictionary, it doesn't necessarily give you a sense of how it acts when it's away from school. It doesn't tell you what it does out on its own time. And words have lives and narratives that change over time that are not tracked by the dictionary, because that's not the purpose of that book. And they make people feel in certain ways that are difficult to pin down. I had a couple of months ago, my son and I went to get COVID tests, as you do, and we didn't make an appointment. So we were standing in line for a long time, and there was a poster about different types of symptoms that you might have. And they were like, well, did you have sudden symptoms or did you have abrupt symptoms? And I was like, that's the same thing. Sudden and abrupt is the same. And then, you know, we had a whole conversation about what's the difference between sudden and abrupt. The point is that the dictionary can't tell you the difference between sudden and abrupt, but there is one. And the dictionary cannot tell you what content is when you say it about art on Twitter. The dictionary, I don't think the dictionary even knows that Twitter exists, to be honest.
The dictionary is, I mean, I'm not against the edifice of the dictionary as something.
I love the dictionary.
Me too. I used to memorize words as a dictionary as a kid.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Thanks, Juge.
You're welcome.
So I'm not against the the idea of the dictionary, but it's a dead document. The second it is printed, before it's printed, long before it's printed, it's obsolete and wrong.
Right. It's like yesterday's newspaper.
Right. Language is alive, and nowhere for good or ill is language more alive than somewhere like Twitter, where a sentence can be comprehensible to one person and totally alien to the next, based on whether or not they saw a certain meme 10 years ago.
Right. So and also, content has been corporate speak for like a really long time.
Right, like 50, 60 years.
As we previously elucidated. I don't know if that definition is even covered in the dictionary, because I did not read the posts of the people who posted excerpts of the dictionary. They were completely wasted on me. I assume that it's not, and that's why they posted them, to support their argument that it's fine to call things content.
Yeah, it's not. I also had Wikipedia sent to me.
Nice.
Yeah, that's always wonderful. I mean, I adore Wikipedia. I read it all the time. I've learned much from Wikipedia.
But again, I have a Wikipedia tab open right now. Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's yours?
I was reading up on the Dyatlov Pass incident again.
Nice. I was reading about Arctic sledge trips that you can go on, like, as a tourist. And there's one where you can, like, take a dog sled to the Dyatlov Pass, which seems fucked to me. But also probably fine. Mine is Kim Philby. Harold Adrian Russell Kim Philby was a British intelligence officer and a double agent for the Soviet Union. This is the actual guy that Bill Hayden is based on.
Oh, that's so cool. We're very big
spy
fans.
Yes.
But yeah, just to walk it back again.
Yes.
Fuck anything that suits say, and fuck their conception of art as a resource that they can use to fill out a programming schedule. Fuck them. It's not what it's for.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really no need to. Why even entertain this as like a thing that there's room for discussion about? There's not. When we are on social media, all of us were performing our function as content creators, generating whatever it is, the fucking Garmin Bozia that the ads live on.
Right.
And the ads are the thing that the website is actually for. So when any of us gets when you, for example, have a controversial viral tweet and lots of people engage with it, then that means more ad views. You've done a very good content then. And we know this consciously, I think, when we're on social media. Like, I regard my social media practice, so to speak, as different from, as an entirely different entity from my, like, art practice, such as it is. I'm engaging with people in a completely different way, and I recognize that it is, it's part of doing that thing, that like parasocial thing, where I'm showing like my fabulous personality, and people want to engage with that, which frankly is hard won, and I should get paid to be myself. So there. But I've been like, I don't post art on Twitter regularly. Like, I don't post my work in progress because I don't work on like a computer or whatever, which that's another real grandma statement. But it's not like seamless for me to put the things that I'm working on onto Twitter. You know, I have to like scan it or take a photo of it with my phone, which isn't that hard, but then it kind of like, it doesn't look the same. It just, it feels different. It does, like, people post their work on Twitter, and it feels native to Twitter. It feels like that is the place where the art is occurring. And mine is not that. Like, my work is native to books, even when it's been published online. Like, it's clearly not a web comic. It's a book comic that somebody scanned. Like, it doesn't, like, everybody remembers, I think, their first experience of reading, like, His Face All Red. Like, that's a comic that is so brilliant and could not work in a book. Or maybe it could. It's probably been published in a book. I haven't seen it.
It has been, in but it loses a lot because you aren't scanning down.
Right. The way that you interface with the comic is different. And the character of it, the character of what you expect from a comic that you're reading on the internet, the physical things that you have to do in order to consume it, like, this is all relevant to the meaning of the comic. And mine don't work like that. I don't know how. I also haven't tried. So I'm not accustomed to, like, I'm not an artist on Twitter, I guess is what I'm getting at. So the content that I'm generating for Twitter is just me being a shithead. Right. As opposed to, like, my heart and soul, you know, I'm not, it's different.
Right. And
it's not, like, super meaningful to me. And if people don't get it, the stuff that I post, I'm like, well, you're not the audience. Like, people who are buying my books are the audience. You're not getting the correct experience of it. Like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. It really, truly doesn't. And
it's like they're looking at a coat in a museum and being like, oh, well, this isn't keeping me warm. Like, that's correct.
Right. Good work. Uh-huh. I fundamentally see the experience of being on Twitter as something between being like a pop idol and having a storefront and being a therapist.
And also, you know, sitting on the sidewalk with a sign asking for change.
Right.
There's also an element of that.
Twitter is where I built my career.
That is true.
Every job in my field as a writer that I've ever gotten, I got through Twitter, which is the one reason I still have a Twitter account.
You're very good at it. Like, you're very popular on Twitter. I noticed that because part of my Twitter ritual is that I go to your page and see if there's anything I missed. So I happened to notice that you got a lot of followers this week from your fucking content post. Didn't you get like 50?
I actually cracked 9,000, which,
yeah,
mostly just fills me with dread.
I know, it's awful. The more followers you get, the more impossible the site is to use. And I hate that for you, but I understand why they all follow you. I do it too. I don't know if you knew that. It's kind of a cursed thing to be good at.
Yeah,
I suppose. Because when you're good at Twitter, it just means that more people show up in your mentions and say you shot their dog in the face or something.
Right. And you should be in prison.
Like, who the fuck are you? Like, what? You're having a conversation with, I don't even know,
right,
like your stepdad or something. Yeah.
To yell at their bizarre projections, not.
Well, and to yell at you in particular. I think making the very common mistake of thinking that trans women are weak and easy to kill.
And in fact, even if you can penetrate our carapaces, we have redundant organs.
Yeah. And acid blood.
Yeah. Really, what I would say if I were commenting on trans women as a whole is that I admire their purity.
What kind of purity is that?
Oh, no. It's what Ash says about the entity in Alien.
Oh. Yeah, she is pure.
Yeah.
Do you think, is the alien female?
Yes, I think so.
I think so too. I don't know where I came up with that belief, but I have the little, like, alien keychain, and my son asked me about it, and I was describing it with she, her pronouns, and he was like, how do you know that it's a girl? And I was like, I don't, I just do. Well, I just feel certain that it is.
Not to get all essentialist, but we do know that the alien in the original movie lays eggs in its victims.
Oh. Yeah, but like in kind of a rapey way.
Yeah.
It's like a female hyena.
Yes, it is. I mean, Dan O'Bannon, the screenwriter of the movie, actually talked about this explicitly, that what he wanted to create in audiences was the fear that all women live with, which is the fear of rape. He wanted to make it universal. Great.
I love that. I love that for him. Men's rights activist.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
I would like to thank him for his service to women.
For terrifying.
I would like to say that he and he alone is a good ally.
That's true.
And all the other men are going to have to apologize to me personally, including the ones that already have. They're going to have to do it again.
It'll be like the young Pope. You can just put your foot out.
Oh, so good.
Crawl up and kiss it.
Give me the papal tiara. Do you have men just apologize to you?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, just like on behalf of all men.
Uh-huh.
It's awful. I hate it.
It's really weird. I mean, I get the guilt, but it is weird. But and it's very nice to accept for all women everywhere.
You know, bringing it to us is really just a different version of treating us like your fucking mother.
Yes. Anyway. Yes, it is. I hate apologies. You know this. We've been talking for an hour. Do you think we should wrap it up?
I was just thinking that talking about how the alien is a like girl boss is probably a great place to stop.
Seems normal. Seems cool. I feel like when we were talking about it, we tried to have a thing about like what we learned or something. I forget. Like you need to have a closing segment to like round things out, don't you?
So I think our closing segment here is that we came to the conclusion, fuck content and fuck using the word and fuck the fucking suits who created it.
Yeah. I mean, this just is the expanded version of the tweet, as it turns out. There's calling art content is indefensible. And if you have a defense for it, you're welcome to at me on Twitter about it. Post it in several tweets, one right after the other. All the better if you don't follow me. And as soon as as my eyes encompass the massive text, I'll immediately mute you or block you. And both of us will be so happy. Just take your opinions and shove them up your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, do that. So.
All right, that's it. That's the end.